Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Pack-A-Day Radio Show, live from the 1250 AM and 105.7 FM, the Fan Studios, powered by the Pottawatomie Sportsbook. Reminder, the Mason Crosby Show is coming up next from 9 to 11 right here on the Fan. And joining us, out of nowhere, on the Fan Guest Hotline, powered by Gruber Law, is the one and only Jacob Westendorf, Pack-A-Day Podcast, Packers on SI. You can find him on social media, at Jacob Westendorf. Jacob, it is great to be chatting with you, my friend. How are you doing?
Yeah, good to be back. Quite the weekend if you're a Packers fan. Minnesota and Chicago don't look so great. Kind of a rock fight last night, and the Packers were dominant, I think is the word that they used a bunch. So it's a good start to the regular season.
I want to talk primarily Packers, but I know you're a Michigan guy. I'm sure you were watching with a little bit of eager anticipation to see how J.J. McCarthy was going to look in his first game for a variety of different reasons. Obviously, a pretty shaky first three quarters, followed up by a pretty epic fourth quarter. What was your overall takeaway from McCarthy last night?
Yeah, it is a internal conflict for sure, because I want him to do well, or I feel those feelings about his days from wearing the winged helmet in college. But at the same time, I don't want him to play well for the Minnesota Vikings for obvious reasons. So it was everything he did last night. The pick six was surprising, I guess, just because he never made decisions quite like that in college. That was about as bad as it could possibly get. But it was a bit of a reminder, I guess, not to end a guy's career after two quarters of a football game, and watching him rise to the occasion on the road in the fourth quarter in spots like this is a guy who won the first game in Columbus that Michigan had won in 20-something years. Like, this is none of that stuff is surprising. Again, maybe physically he won't ever fully hack it, but from an intangible standpoint and the mental side of things and everything like that, and you can see the way the team kind of rallied around him as well. All of that stuff is stuff that you heard about a bunch when he was in college. So it's interesting. I'm interested to see how Minnesota bounces forward, I guess, and then how Chicago bounces back against Detroit this weekend, because both of those teams are coming off games where not a great taste in their mouths.
No, certainly not. And the thing about McCarthy, 36-2 in high school, 27-1 in college, now 1-0 in the NFL. And I'm sure that winning percentage is going to take a hit over time in the NFL. But he just does know how to win football games. So we'll give him certainly credit for that. And he showed that a little bit as well. I thought he was a little, like, the moment was a little bit too big until it wasn't. And then some of the stuff that you would normally expect from him, I think, took over a little bit more in that fourth quarter. How did your view of the NFC North change over week one, if it did at all?
I don't want to say drastically, but I mean, I think that over one game, like through one game, and again, everything is rose-colored glasses. Week one can lie to you, all those things that we say after week one, right? But it feels like the Packers are a cut above everyone else. You know, of the groups that played and everybody that was on the field this week, Green Bay's defense was the one unit between the four teams that I think was truly dominant against an opponent that has a offense that I know Detroit was breaking in new coordinators and some new offensive linemen and everything like that. But that is largely the same offense that went up and down the field. You're going, Andy, you were there. You watched, I mean, Edgerrin Cooper, Quay Walker, this defensive line, this Packers front seven really does have the makings of a truly dominant group. And I'm really eager to see this test that they have coming up on Thursday with Jaden Daniels, because that's the difference there is Jared Goff is not as talented as Daniels, and Daniels has that capability of being an upper echelon quarterback. But the rest of the group, Chicago, Caleb Williams looks like the Caleb Williams from, you know, his rookie season, some spectacular stuff and a lot of stuff that they scored 3 points on offense before being down by 10 points after an opening drive. So I don't want to call it garbage time, but pretty close to by the time they scored their second touchdown of the game. As it turns out, Ben Johnson didn't reinvent the NFL, and at least through one game, there's some question marks there. Minnesota, I just said all those things, but it was a clunky start for them before they kind of found their footing. I think their defense is still going to be very good when it's all said and done. But Detroit, Chicago, I think there's some questions that both of those teams need to answer. In Minnesota, you know, the reality still is J.J. McCarthy is, all intents and purposes, a rookie quarterback. So if you're a Packers fan right now, you got to be feeling really good about your chances of winning this division for the first time since 2021.
Yeah, I think so too. I certainly put him in that category right now. But like you said, we're just not crowning anyone yet. There's a lot of ball game left, a lot of football game to be played, and we're going to find out a lot more about Green Bay this upcoming Thursday against Washington as well. We're being joined by Jacob Westendorf, Packaday Podcast, Packers on SI. You can find him on social media at Jacob Westendorf. One of the things I want to talk about offensively for Green Bay, Jacob, is the target share, because this was, I think, a little bit of what we expected. A lot of spreading the wealth around. But in this game, you had the leading receiver from a reception standpoint is Jaden Reed with 3 receptions. From a yardage standpoint, it's Romeo Doubs with 68 yards. Tucker Kraft and Jaden Reed both got touchdowns. From a target share, Reed got 5 targets. Kraft and Doubs got 4. Then you had Wicks and Golden each with 2. And Jacobs, Musgrave, Brooks, Fitzpatrick, and Savion Williams all with 1. Did anything stand out to you? Is this what you expected? And do they need to change anything up? Or is this the same sort of formula you would expect moving forward?
I think it's just the way Matt LaFleur kind of wants to design his offense. As he's talked about, you know, he made that funny line last year where he talked about the number one receiver and that line making him want to throw up. But I think that there's some truth to that, because Green Bay doesn't have there is no Justin Jefferson or Ja'Marr Chase or anything like that. But you know, there's packages, there's personnel groupings and everything to where, you know, Matthew Golden as a rookie, he's a smaller guy. He might struggle a little bit as far as blocking in the run game, for example. So I know there's one clip. He'll be fine. He has the want to and everything like that. But yep. I think as far as the way Green Bay wants to play offense, I think that really is just the way they want to do it. They want to make you pick your poison on the offensive side of the ball. And, you know, the Packers, some of the best offenses they had were ones that could make you do that. Now, of course, the group that ended up on the cover of Sports Illustrated years ago, that group was special. But even still, the team that won the Super Bowl, you know, Greg Jennings was kind of your lead dog, but they had three or four other guys at least that could really hurt you in that passing game. And Green Bay, this team, again, none of these guys have established themselves as stars. I know Matthew Golden, we're all excited about him as a first-round pick and coming off of a strong training camp, but Jaden Reed is a little dinged up. Romeo Doubs is steady Eddie, consistent, made the biggest play of the game on Sunday afternoon. So I think this is the way they're going to do things, and I think that's perfectly fine. You know, at some point you may have to find some consistency with the guys on the field, just so, hey, we're in 2 minute and we got to go down the field and score and try and win the game. These guys are now in a rhythm. They know what Jordan Love's doing. They know what everything's going on in that given point. But I don't personally have a problem with the way that those things are going.
No, I think that's totally fair, and I think that's well said. We're being joined by Jacob Westendorf, Packaday Podcast, Packers on SI. Find him again at Jacob Westendorf on social media. Is there anything that gave you any fear, trepidation, hesitation, anything like that coming out of this game? Obviously, a lot of really positive stuff that took place, but was there anything that that gave you a little bit of nervousness as we start getting ready for Washington in week 2?
Yeah, that lull that they hit in the middle of the third quarter, or really the whole third quarter on offense especially, because in the first half, it pretty much looked like they were going to be able to name their score. I think they scored on every possession except for their last one, which they kind of bled out the clock, which you and I were talking about as it played out. I think they played that really well with the way everything went. But then you go into the third quarter, Love nearly throws 2 interceptions back-to-back. I know some people are giving him credit for saying that he saw the flag. I'm not going to do that just because I don't know if that's true or not. And if it is, then, you know, great for him. But either way, you don't score in the third quarter. You try and establish your run game with 3 runs and then a punt. The last one might have been an RPO, but either way, they don't execute on that, and then they have to punt. And then they don't really put the game away, if you will, until later in the game when their defense gets a couple of sacks and forces a punt that they get the ball at the 35-yard line. I think that was a sign of something. Last year, the Packers would hit these just lulls where they would stop scoring or stop playing well on offense for an extended period of time. That's where, with what we were just talking about with the receiver distribution, that might be, LaFleur used to call them get-back plays, where you would get back like on schedule, and he would draw up some concepts. A lot of times it was for Davante Adams, but getting the ball moving down the field and stuff like that. You know, Washington, that's a high-powered offense. In 2 weeks, they're going to play Dallas. That's a pretty high-powered offense. They looked pretty good on opening night as well. They'll play the Bengals after that. They've got plenty of backs and receivers and quarterback that can throw the ball all over the field. At some point, the defense is going to give up some points, just the nature of business in the NFL. I just wonder, can the Packers avoid one of those lulls that cost them a game, and can they go score for score if they have to? They have the talent to do that, but can they execute like that consistently?
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. And that just kind of brings us to the conversation there about Jordan Love. How would you evaluate him in totality in this game? So it's, for me, he had two misses. He had the miss to Jaden Reed that was behind him on the RPO. He had the miss to Tucker Kraft on the one early in the game on the deep corner route where he just overcooked it by about 10 yards on that particular play. And then, like you said, he had the two turnover-worthy plays, the potential interceptions, one that was, you know, called back, and then the one that the linebacker just dropped, Anzalone just dropped on that particular play. The Anzalone one was really head-scratching. I still don't know exactly what he was. I think he was just trying to throw it away in the turkey hole there, like in between the safety, you know, the deep receiver, I guess, and in the intermediate tight end in that case, Tucker Kraft. But it goes right to, you know, Anzalone in that situation. And then, of course, like you said, yes, there's a flag on the play, but that's and I'll also say this, Brian Branch made a heck of a play on that one. Like, he made an unbelievable diving interception and gets up, I think, without being touched and returns that thing for the touchdown. That was, I mean, Brian Branch is a freak. That was unbelievable. But how, so two potential interceptions, neither of them actually show up in the box score, two, passes that he missed. And then outside of that was basically like perfect the rest of the day. So how do you kind of go about evaluating that?
Yeah, I give him a ton of credit for setting the tone in the game. You know, he almost became a prophet. Parsons gets introduced last, the crowd pops, but they don't get to play defense first. They have to go on offense. And what did we talk about all offseason with this team in these games? It was that they couldn't get off to a fast start. They dug a hole. Like last year, their first division game at home, they were down 28-0 against Minnesota before they even got going for that game. So this game, they get the ball first. He converts two big third downs to Matthew Golden and Dontavian Wicks, and then obviously layers the ball perfectly to Tucker Kraft in the end zone, and bang, it's 7-0 before the Lions have even touched the ball. And I think that was a statement from the quarterback. I think it was a statement from the offense. I think it was a statement for the entire team to kind of keep that energy from the early part of the game going. So you get a lot of credit for that. The answer drive, as I was calling it, it was 10-0. The Lions go down the field and kick a field goal, 16-play drive. And Jordan Love, two plays, touchdown, at 17-3. And all of a sudden, it's like, nope, you're not tying the game. You're not getting a three and out. You're not getting back in this game. So that is, if they had stopped the game right there, we're talking about a 158 passer rating and perfect day for Jordan Love, everything like that. Obviously, that didn't happen. When we talk about those lulls, the quarterback was a big part of that. Those two plays that you just mentioned were part of that. So that's something he's got to get a little bit better on. If we're doing a letter grade, we're talking like a B for the quarterback, which, and that's largely due to those two turnovers that you could add. Because again, it's 17-6 when Brian Branch makes that diving interception. If there's no holding penalty on that play, now it's 17-13, and you just handed them 7 free points when the, you know, Detroit's offense to that point had done largely nothing. So I think Love has been, I think he was really good on Sunday. I don't want to say that he wasn't. I think there's also room for improvement, which is exciting because we've seen him over what he started 40 games or something close to that at this point. He's gotten better throughout those starts, especially when he's been healthy. The other thing about him, people say they want him to run more, but watching him run is just goofy. I don't know how else to describe it, but it's just goofy.
Yeah, it's really weird. The play where he like obviously like fell down, it looked like he got like sniped. And I'm like, what just happened? Like, he's just like, you know, just like ends up on the ground. I think there's obviously a little bit of a slip there as well. But yeah, I think he does need to utilize his legs at times. But I'm kind of cool with him just getting the ball out of his hands and letting the weapons do the running more often than not. But yeah, I'm right there with you. And we evaluate Jordan the same way. And I know some people might be thinking of, well, you're being nitpicky. He didn't have any interceptions in the game. And like, they won easily. Like, we look at everything. We look at the process of everything. And, you know, what you still want to see, even if whether there's a flag on the player, if it comes back or not, you want to see good process. Obviously, and again, I think the Branch one, I'm willing to give a lot more accident forgiveness just because, yeah, that was a really remarkable play by Brian Branch. But the play before that, that was a wonky one that literally should have just, I mean, it literally did go right in the hands of the defender and got away with one a little bit there. But still, I had a good grade on Jordan for this one as well. And I think he's going to build off of this one, especially after missing some of the time with the hand injury also. Jacob, I cannot thank you enough for hopping on very short notice here. Where can we find all of your great work and anything you want to plug on the way out?
Yeah, Packers on SI, so si.com/NFL/Packers. I just had something hit on Rashawn Gary is a team captain for the first time. I did not clarify this, but it's at least since he was in high school. Was not a captain in college and has not been a captain in the NFL. So he was pretty emotional about that after the game, so that was kind of cool to see that. And then Thursday is the day of the game. I have a story coming out about the 2001 game between the Packers and Washington Commanders from that night in particular. I talked to a couple people about how that went, so I don't want to give too much away, but if you watched that game, I think you know exactly what I'm talking about for what I'm talking about. So that'll come out on Thursday, so check that out then.
You're telling me you wrote about a Michigan player this week for your one of your articles? I'm stunned, my friend. I'm absolutely stunned. Thank you so much, Jacob. I cannot thank you enough for hopping on short.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why it's not
outside of Cleveland.
You know
the Browns outside of
you know
Browns
why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Notice, I am sure we will do this again very soon. I think you are now the highest frequent flyer miles here on the Packaday Radio Show. I appreciate you a ton, and we'll do it very soon.
It's an honor, Annie. Thank you.
You bet. Thanks to Jacob for joining us on the Fan Guest Hotline, powered by Gruber Law. One call, that's all. Make sure to follow him on social media at Jacob Westendorf, and of course, over on Packers on SI. It's the Packaday Radio Show. We got a lot more right after this.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.